House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
If you're paying attention, you might have noticed that there are a good number of new Democratic lawmakers this session. That's a fine thing, and you'll meet another one in today's installment of Capital Ideas, the podcast where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. Today's first termer is Representative Victoria Hunt from Washington's 5th Legislative District. I predict you'll be impressed no matter where you find yourself on the political spectrum, and you'll meet her in a matter of seconds. We recorded this conversation on Thursday, February 20th, 2025, day 39 of the 105-day session, and here we go. Welcome to Capital Ideas, Representative Victoria Hunt from the 5th Legislative District. I'm going to let you tell a little bit about the 5th Legislative District and also about yourself.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. My name is Victoria Hunt. I am a new representative in the Washington State House of Representatives, and I represent the beautiful 5th Legislative District. This is an area from Issaquah, includes Maple Valley, Black Diamond, and Enumclaw, also quite a bit of unincorporated King County. It's very beautiful forested areas and waterways and parts of several other cities as well.
What led up to your deciding that you wanted to be a member of the State House? I know you were a city council member for Issaquah.
That's right.
For a period of time, at least.
Yes. I initially got involved in my community because at the time I was working as affiliate faculty in the University of Washington in the Urban Design and Planning Department. And I really was inspired by what I was teaching there. We were working on issues as far as making sure that cities were able to grow sustainably and that the urban wildland interface was protected and that we were growing in ways that made sure that we would continue to have wildlife and thriving forests. And that was really important to me. And I also saw my community as a place where those ideas would be really important for the future of the city and of the community. And so I began serving on our local planning policy commission, got a sense for how local government worked. And then from there, I was appointed to the city council in Issaquah. And through that experience, I got to know the issues of the community and have seen how the state is able to interact with our cities. And I really wanted to step up when I saw that now Senator Bill Ramos was running for the state Senate. There was an opening, and I wanted to continue to make sure that I was serving my community. I threw my hat in the ring and went for this opportunity.
And like many people who end up here, you know already when you got here what legislating is like from having been on the city council.
I had some experience. I think there's also a lot to be learned, and I've certainly been learning a lot from my colleagues about how things work at the state.
Tell me about your orientation period.
Well, we had a lot of help from very experienced members of the House of Representatives. One of the most interesting parts of the orientation for me was a session about what I wish I had learned, where representatives sort of reflected back on their first time and talked with us about some of the lessons learned. We also had training about how a bill becomes a law in terms of all of the different steps that it has to go through and how to navigate that process, as well as formal training on a number of other aspects of how to legislate.
It's complicated, isn't it?
It's definitely complicated, and it's definitely one of those things where you also very much have to learn by doing. And so I'm in that process now.
And what are your committee assignments?
I am extremely honored to be the vice chair of Energy and Environment, and I also serve on local government as well as the Transportation Committee. Those are my three committees.
And it makes plenty of sense that you're the vice chair of that committee because in real life, you are employed as an environmental scientist, are you not?
That's right. I have a doctorate degree in ecology, and I currently work for a company that helps local governments as well as private companies across the country reduce their pollution. So we do assessments of their greenhouse gas emissions and provide inventories and then provide information about how they might target the sources of pollution.
I see that one of your bills, coincidentally, has to do with sewage spills. That's not a very appetizing subject, but I'd like to hear about that bill.
You're absolutely right. Not very appetizing, but very important. So this is a bill that would make information about large sewage spills more transparent to the public. There are currently a number of sewage spills, maybe over 100 every year. They are required, the entities that are spilling sewage into our beautiful Puget Sound are required to report that information to ecology. But that information is not very readily available to the public. And in fact, in our hearing, we heard about how people who would really like to have this information to make decisions about whether they're going to swim somewhere or, go fishing, go boating, they would like to have this information. They just can't find it. So this is a bill that would require that information to be made public so that the community members, the public, will know where these sewage spills are occurring and they can make decisions about their own exposure to the nasty things that are in a sewage spill, as well as they can more successfully advocate and effectively advocate for environmental protection and for the environment, because sewage spills, they absolutely affect human health. They also affect our wildlife, our orcas, our salmon. That's all very much impacted by these spills. And so with this, we give our community another tool to advocate. And so one of the things that leads to some of these very large sewage spills is that there are some systems that are combined sewer stormwater systems. And in those cases, when there's really heavy rains, there is sometimes a discharge that is going directly into our Puget Sound and into our waterways. And so those are the kinds of events that we really need to make sure the information about these is publicly available.
Those are almost impossible to prevent, I suppose, with the infrastructure that we have now.
Yes, there are some spills that definitely we need to make sure that we are working to have best available science to reduce the spills. And then for our current state of the infrastructure, we also need to make sure that that information about these spills is available so that people can act accordingly.
How's that bill doing?
The bill was voted out of Energy and Environment, and I'm very proud to say it was a unanimous vote, and it has received a lot of support. It's also one of the priority bills of the Environmental Priorities Coalition and Washington Conservation Action. It has a lot of support, and it's a lot of support across the aisle as well.
So if this makes it all the way to the governor's desk, we will end up having a website that is easily accessed?
Exactly. This bill would require Department of Ecology to publish that information on a website in a timely manner, and then that information can be accessed by folks across the state.
This is not really related to that bill, but In a sense it does have one thing in common, and that has to do with a bill that you're sponsoring about diaper changing stations. So moving from sewage spills to diapers.
This bill was inspired by a constituent. The constituent actually went to my seatmate and described how in her family, oftentimes there's no way for her husband to change their child's diaper because the only place where the diaper changing tables are was in the women's restroom. So he would end up changing the diaper in the back of a car, on the floor somewhere, right? All of these situations that we, as caregivers, taking care of a baby, we would really like to avoid. And she brought this issue forward. She has continued to advocate for this, and this is really a bill that would make these diaper-changing tables more accessible to more caregivers in public buildings. And the way it does that is it requires, when there's a major renovation of the bathrooms or for a new building, that you have a diaper-changing table in a part of the building that is not only the women's restroom. So it can be in a gender-neutral restroom or the men's restroom, or somewhere else in the building that is accessible. And really, this will allow other caregivers more access, the fathers, grandfathers, other caretakers, to have access to a diaper-changing table so they don't have to, figure out some solution or go back to their car and change the baby in the back of the car.
Sounds like a family-friendly bill.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I, as a mom of two young children, I try to really bring that perspective to the work. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, and I think making sure that parents are supported in taking care of their children, this is something that we can do, and this is one way we can do that.
Good luck.
Thank you.
You have another bill that seems to be much more serious, and that has to do with security surrounding critical energy facilities. It seems like a no-brainer to me, having read the bill, but I would like to hear you talk about this.
This was a concept that I first became aware of when the Department of Commerce came to me. They described how in recent times there has been an attack on our energy infrastructure in the state of Washington, and they were not able to as effectively navigate that situation, share information with their partner agencies, with other public utilities, because of fear that that information would end up in the hands of the public, who really should not have information about the weaknesses of our critical energy infrastructure system because of Public Records Act requirements. And so what this bill would do is it would exempt very narrow exemption for information about attacks on our critical energy infrastructure, information that could allow people to better understand weaknesses of our systems and exploit those weaknesses. And so this is really important for public safety. It's really important for the functioning and reliability of our energy. And it is also, you know, I'm glad to hear you say it's a no-brainer. When this was brought to me by Department of Commerce, I agreed. And so this will be a bill that will allow them to better coordinate response, will make sure that the agencies that need information get that information and that the information doesn't get into the hands of the wrong people.
You've been in the legislature now for 6 weeks. People often describe that as drinking from a fire hose. Mm-hmm. I had one member not long ago tell me that it was drinking from a fire hose if the fire hose was shooting actual fire. I'd like to hear what your impression is now as a new lawmaker on this beautiful campus in a very challenging session after 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. The pace that we consider bills and that we, you know, go through our deliberations is something that I'm still adjusting to. It's a long session, but it's really not that long. You know, it's been 6 weeks, but it in some ways feels like it's really gone by very quickly. And during that time, we have so many different bills and so many different concepts that we are evaluating and deliberating on making changes. I am learning about how that works and how to make sure that I am effectively participating in that process and also making sure that I really am giving the attention and the deep dive on issues that I can really make a difference on. And so that's been part of my learning curve.
Have you passed your first bill off the House floor yet?
I have not. I have done my first floor speech. I was very honored to be the speaker on the Children's Day resolution. And I had my children there with me, and it was a very special time. And I was able to speak to the importance of protecting our environment and making choices today that will undoubtedly impact their futures. And, you know, just the gravity of that importance in the work that we do.
How was that experience? I'll never do it. Most people will never do it. But what's the experience like of standing up on the House floor for the first time and saying, thank you, Madam Speaker?
It's quite humbling. It's such a beautiful building and there's such history. And you're with colleagues that have such a deep knowledge of the state and their communities, and to be able to represent my community in that way, in that space, which is truly very, very grand, it's quite humbling.
I want to go back to your scientist background now and ask you a question, which is maybe impossible to answer, but how far do you think that we are from a genuine green energy structure here in Washington?
That's a great question. We have so many different challenges to tackle. But at the same time, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that Washington has been a real beacon for clean energy in the nation. The Clean Energy Transformation Act has been a hugely important light in this area, and also with the Climate Commitment Act and all of the infrastructure that has been able to be funded through that. And I think there's been really great progress made in this area. At the same time, we know we have a number of challenges. So transmission build out is a challenge as we build out more clean energy resources, which we absolutely need, more renewable energy. We will need more transmission. We need a way to get the energy from where it's generated to where the people are going to flip on their light switch. So that's a challenge. That's something that we're actively working on in the state legislature. And then there are additional challenges associated with, for example, storing energy. That's actually something that I am passionate about and working on currently. I have one of my bills is around residential battery storage. And this is a way that our community can both support the overall reliability of our energy grid, but can also have the ability to, if there is a natural disaster, if the power goes out, they're able to have that battery for their own energy in their home. So we have a number of challenges. We're working through those challenges, but at the same time, Washington continues to be a leader in this area. And it's one of the reasons why I was very proud to run for office and to serve in this seat.
On that battery bill, I read that bill and I was curious, and I think you just answered part of it. Is this the kind of situation where this would maybe serve the same purpose as a generator that someone had, but maybe with a longer lifespan than a 100-gallon container of propane?
This would have one additional really big benefit. A residential battery that is connected to the grid has the additional system-wide benefits of the utility can use energy from that battery during peak load, meaning when they need more energy, they can use some of that battery's energy. That helps us not need quite as much transmission build out, which, as I mentioned previously, that's one of our challenges. And it also helps the utility meet the demand of energy, especially at those times where the demand is really highest. So it improves overall grid reliability in that way, and that makes it a big difference from a generator that's purely serving that one home, that one individual. One of the reasons why I'm so excited about that is that my community recently experienced this bomb cyclone where there was a huge amount of damage, including a very extended period of time where people didn't have power. And it really drove home for me the importance of energy reliability. People needed to find a way to charge their devices, their hearing aids, oxygen concentrators, all kinds of devices that people really need. And it's important for public safety and important just for our day-to-day lives. So that energy reliability, you know, that's super important. And I'm very excited about making progress on this issue for my community.
And this would be a whole lot cleaner than thousands and thousands of generators burning gasoline or propane.
It would be cleaner for the environment, and it has this additional benefit that it is benefiting everyone because of the way that these batteries would be interacting with the grid.
How's that bill doing?
I am very pleased that that bill was voted out of Energy and Environment, and I think it has some work to go to make sure that we are working really closely with the utilities who would be administering the program. It's a bill that would benefit the utilities, and so I really want to make sure that it works for them. So there's some continued work on it, but I think it's making its way through the process, and I'm really excited about it.
Victoria, we've been sitting here for 27 minutes, and I only had you for 30 minutes on your schedule, and I would like to give you a chance to sort of take us out here. How would you like to end this podcast for today?
Well, I am 6 weeks into my first legislative session. I have been so honored to represent my community in this role and to learn from my colleagues. So many helpful pointers and tips that my colleagues have provided, and I look forward to continuing to learn. I am advocating for clean air and clean water for my community, for affordability, affordable housing, and for a public education system that serves all of our children and meets all of our children's needs. These are big issues, and so for all of my constituents and all of my community, if you have any questions about what I'm doing, I would love to hear from you. I always love to see people in person. And additionally, I welcome emails or calls. And I would love to hear from you because really that's how I do this job better.
Representative Victoria Hunt, that's a great way to sign off. And I just want to say thank you for coming by and giving a half hour to Capital Ideas. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
My pleasure. Well, that's Representative Victoria Hunt, and that's another Capital Ideas in the books. If you're a subscriber, that's great. And if you're not, it's a painless process. Just visit your favorite podcast provider or open up the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and click that media button at the top of the page. From there, hit Capital Ideas Podcast, and when that page opens, it'll all become obvious. If you're lucky enough to live here in the Evergreen State, this is your state government, and what happens here matters. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889, the year the Great Seattle Fire broke out when a pot of glue burst into flames in Victor Claremont's woodworking shop. Thanks for listening.